First Chapter Fridays. Welcome to First Chapter Fridays. It's a podcast where I read the first chapter of a young adult book out loud in the hopes that you'll be reading too. And whatever you choose to read, as long as you're reading something, that's what I'm here for. I love young adult books, even though they're not written for me. I'm supposed to be an adult reader, but I think the point of being a reader at all is that you read what you like. So I'm here because I love books and I love to read, and I'm here to read to you. My name's Kate. I'm a middle school English teacher. Guess you saw that one coming. I've always been a book geek. I've always been a word nerd. So here we are. If you're a steady listener of 1CF, you'll know that I stepped away from the podcast for a while because I fell victim to the same thing that happens to a lot of readers. I didn't like what I was reading, and I was trying to force something that just wasn't working. So I'm happy to say that that is no longer the case. I abandoned what wasn't working, and I'm back to what is working. So the book I've got on today is One of Us is Lying by Karen M. McManus. It is a great murder mystery featuring high school students who were all in the same detention room. And the one who got murdered was the one who published an online forum revealing everyone's secrets. So since everyone's got something to hide, everyone's an immediate suspect. And I am totally hooked. My longest streak was 4 or 5 chapters in a single 2-hour sitting. I got so hooked into the story. I still am hooked into the story. I'm significantly into the book right now. I would say probably I'm about like a third of the way into the book, which is a pretty good pace for me. And I am really enjoying the drama that comes with it. I'm really being inspired to, you know, figure out this whodunit and expecting, you know, twists and turns because that is hallmark of murder mystery. So I am back in the saddle, I guess you could say. So with that, let's get to reading. Chapter 1. Bronwyn, Monday, September 24th, 2:55 p.m. A sex tape, a pregnancy scare, 2 cheating scandals. And that's just this week's update. If all of you knew of Bayview High was Simon Kelleher's gossip app, you'd wonder how anyone found time to even go to class. Old news, Bronwyn, says a voice over my shoulder. Wait till you see tomorrow's post. Damn. I hate getting caught reading about that, especially by its creator. I lower my phone and slam my locker shut. Whose lives are you ruining next, Simon? Simon falls into step beside me as I move against the flow of students heading for the exit. It's a public service, he says with a dismissive wave. You tutor Reggie Crawley, don't you? Wouldn't you rather know he has a camera in his bedroom? I don't bother answering. Me getting anywhere near the bedroom of perpetual stoner Reggie Crawler is about as likely as Simon growing a conscience. Anyway, they bring it on themselves. If people didn't lie and cheat, I'd be out of business. Simon's cold blue eyes take in my lengthening strides. Where are you rushing off to? Covering yourself in extracurricular glory? I wish. As if to taunt me, an alert crosses my phone. Mathlete practice, 3 p.m., APOC coffee. Followed by a text from one of my teammates. Evan's here. Of course he is. The cute mathlete, less of an oxymoron than you might think, seems to only ever show up when I can't. Not exactly, I say. As a general rule, and especially lately, I try to give Simon as little information as possible. We push through green metal doors to the back stairwell, a dividing line between the dinginess of the original Bayview High and its bright, airy new wing. Every year, more wealthy families get priced out of San Diego and come 15 miles east to Bayview, expecting that their tax dollars will buy them a nicer school experience than popcorn ceilings and scarred linoleum. Simon's still on my heels when I reach Mr. Avery's lab on the third floor, and I half turn with my arms crossed. "Don't you have someplace to be?" "Yeah, detention," Simon says, and waits for me to keep walking. When I grasp the knob instead, he bursts out laughing. "You're kidding me! You too? What's your crime?" "I'm wrongfully accused," I mutter, and yank the door open. Three other students are already seated, and I pause to take them in. Not the group I would have predicted, except one. Nate McCauley tips his chair back and smirks at me.
"You make a wrong turn. This is detention, not student council."
He should know. Nate's been in trouble since fifth grade, which is right around the time we last spoke. The gossip mill tells me he's on probation with Bayview's Finest for something. It might be a DUI, it might be drug dealing. He's a notorious supplier, but my knowledge is purely theoretical.
"Save the commentary."
Mr. Avery checks something off on a clipboard and closes the door behind Simon. High arched windows lining the back wall send triangles of afternoon sun splashing across the floor, and faint sounds of football practice float from the field behind the parking lot below. I take a seat as Cooper Clay, who's palming a crumpled piece of paper like a baseball, whispers, "Heads up, Addie," and tosses it toward the girl across from him. Addie Prentice blinks, smiles uncertainly, and lets the ball drop to the floor. The classroom clock inches toward 3, and I follow its progress with a helpless feeling of injustice. I shouldn't even be here. I should be at Epoch Coffee, flirting awkwardly with Evan Neiman over differential equations. Mr. Avery is a give detention first, ask questions never kind of guy. But maybe there's still time to change his mind. I clear my throat and start to raise my hand until I notice Nate's smirk broadening. "Mr. Avery, that wasn't my phone you found. I don't know how it got in my bag. This is mine," I say, brandishing my iPhone in its melon-striped case. "Honestly, you'd have to be clueless to bring a phone to Mr. Avery's lab. He has a strict no-phone policy and spends the first 10 minutes of every class rooting through backpacks like he's head of airline security and we're all on the watch list. My phone was in my locker, like always."
"You too?"
Addie turns to me so quickly, her blonde shampoo ad hair swirls around her shoulders. She must have been surgically removed from her boyfriend in order to show up alone. "That wasn't my phone either."
"Me three," Cooper chimes in.
His southern accent make it sounds like three. He and Addie exchange surprised looks, and I wonder how this is news to them when they're part of the same clique. Maybe uber-popular people have better things to talk about than unfair detentions.
"Somebody punked us!"
Simon leans forward with his elbows on the desk, looking spring-loaded and ready to pounce on fresh gossip. His gaze darts over all four of us, clustered in the middle of the otherwise empty classroom, before settling on Nate. "Why would anybody want to trap a bunch of students with mostly spotless records in detention? Seems like the sort of thing that, a guy who's here all the time might do for fun." I look at Nate, but I can't picture it. Rigging detention sounds like work, and everything about Nate, from his messy dark hair to his ratty leather jacket, screams, "Can't be bothered," or yawns it, maybe. He meets my eyes, but he doesn't say a word, just tips his chair back even farther. Another millimeter and he'll fall right over. Cooper sits up straighter, a frown crossing his Captain America face. "Hang on. I thought this was just a mix-up, but if the same thing happened to all of us, it's somebody's stupid idea of a prank. And I'm missing baseball practice because of it." He says it like he's a heart surgeon being detained from a life-saving operation.
Mr. Avery rolls his eyes. Save the conspiracy theories for another teacher. I'm not buying it. You all know the rules against bringing phones to class, and you broke them. He gives Simon an especially sour glance. Teachers know about that exists, but there's not much they can do to stop it. Simon only uses initials to identify people and never talks openly about school. Now listen up. You're here until 4. I want each of you to write a 500-word essay on how technology is ruining American high schools. Anyone who can't follow the rules gets another detention tomorrow. What do we write with? Addie asks. There aren't any computers here. Most classrooms have Chromebooks, but Mr. Avery, who looks like he should have retired decades ago, is the one holdout. Mr. Avery crosses to Addie's desk and taps the corner of a lined yellow notepad. We all have one. Explore the magic of long handwriting. It's a lost art. Addie's pretty heart-shaped face is a mask of confusion. But how do we know when we've reached 500 words? Count, Mr. Avery replies. His eyes drop to the phone I'm still holding. And hand that over, Miss Rojas. Doesn't the fact that you're confiscating my phone twice give you pause? Who has two phones? I ask. Nate grins, so quick I almost miss it. Seriously, Mr. Avery, somebody is playing a joke on us. Mr. Avery's snowy mustache twitches in annoyance, and he extends his hand with a beckoning motion. Phone, Miss Rojas. Unless you want a return visit. I give it over with a sigh as he looks disapprovingly at the others. The phones I took from the rest of you earlier are in my desk. You'll get them back after detention. Addie and Cooper exchanged amused glances, probably because their actual phones are safe in their backpacks. Mr. Avery tosses my phone into a drawer and sits behind the teacher's desk, opening a book as he prepares to ignore us for the next hour. I pull out a pen, tap it against my yellow notepad, and contemplate the assignment. Does Mr. Avery really believe technology is ruining schools? That's a pretty sweeping statement to make over a few contraband phones. Maybe it's a trap, and he's looking for us to contradict him instead of agree. I glance at Nate, who's bent over his notepad writing, "Computers suck," over and over in big block letters. It's possible I'm overthinking this. We'll be right back after this. Cooper. Monday, September 24th, 3:05 p.m. My hand hurts within minutes. It's pathetic, I guess, but I can't remember the last time I wrote anything longhand. Plus, I'm using my right hand, which never feels natural no matter how many years I've done it. My father insisted I learn to write right-handed in second grade after he first saw me pitch. Your left arm's gold, he told me. Don't waste it on crap that don't matter, which is anything but pitching, as far as he's concerned. That was when he started calling me Cooperstown, like the Baseball Hall of Fame. Nothing like putting a little pressure on an 8-year-old. Simon reaches for his backpack and roots around, unzipping every section. He hoists it onto his lap and peers inside. Where the hell's my water bottle? No talking, Mr. Kelleher, Mr. Avery says without looking up. I know, but my water bottle's missing, and I'm thirsty. Mr. Avery points toward the sink at the back of the room, its counter crowded with beakers and petri dishes. Get yourself a drink. Quietly. Simon gets up and grabs a cup from a stack on the counter, filling it with water from the tap. He heads back to his seat and puts the cup on his desk, but seems distracted by Nate's methodical writing. Dude, he says, kicking the sneaker against the leg of Nate's desk. Seriously, did you put those phones in our backpacks to mess with us? Now Mr. Avery looks up, frowning. I said quietly, Mr. Kelleher. Nate leans back and crosses his arms. Why would I do that? Simon shrugs. Why do you do anything? So you'll have company for whatever your screw-up of the day was? One more word out of either of you, and it's detention tomorrow, Mr. Avery warns. Simon opens his mouth anyway, but before he can speak, there's the sound of tires squealing and the crash of two cars hitting each other. Addie gasps, and I brace myself against my desk like somebody just rear-ended me. Nate, who looks glad for the interruption, is the first on his feet toward the window. Who gets into a fender bender in the school parking lot? He asks. Bronwyn looks at Mr. Avery like she's asking for permission, and when he gets up from his desk, she heads for the window as well. Addie follows her, and I finally unfold myself from my seat. Might as well see what's going on. I lean against the ledge to look outside, and Simon comes up beside me with a disparaging laugh as he surveys the scene below. Two cars, an old red one and a nondescript gray one, are smashed into each other at a right angle. We all stare at them in silence until Mr. Avery lets out an exasperated sigh. I better make sure no one was hurt. He runs his eyes over all of us and zeroes in on Bronwyn as the most responsible of the bunch. Miss Rojas, keep this room contained until I get back. Okay, Bronwyn says, casting a nervous glance toward Nate. We stay at the window, watching the scene below, but before Mr. Avery or another teacher appears outside, both cars start their engines and drive out of the parking lot. Well, that was anticlimactic, Simon says. He heads back to his desk and picks up his cup, but instead of sitting, he wanders to the front of the room and scans the periodic table of elements poster. He leans out into the hallway like he's about to leave, but then he turns and raises his cup like he's toasting us. Anyone else want some water? I do, Addie says, slipping into his chair. Then get it yourself, princess. Simon smirks. Addie rolls her eyes and stays put while Simon leans against Mr. Avery's desk. Literally, huh? What do you do with yourself now that homecoming's over? Big gap between now and senior prom. Addie looks at me without answering. I don't blame her. Simon's train of thought almost never goes anywhere good when it comes to our friends. He acts like he's above caring whether he's popular, but he was pretty smug when he wound up on the junior prom court last spring. I'm still not sure how he pulled that off, unless he traded keeping secrets for votes. Simon was nowhere to be found on homecoming court last week, though. I was voted king, so maybe I'm next on his list to harass or whatever the hell he's doing. What's your point, Simon? I ask, taking a seat next to Addie. Addie and I aren't close, exactly, but I kind of feel protective of her. She's been dating my best friend since freshman year, and she's a sweet girl. Also, not the kind of person who knows how to stand up to a guy like Simon, who just won't quit. She's a princess, and you're a jock, he says. He thrusts his chin toward Bronwyn, then at Nate. And you're a brain, and you're a criminal. You're all walking teen movie stereotypes. What about you? Bronwyn asks. She's been hovering near the window, but now goes to her desk and perches on top of it. She crosses her legs and pulls her dark ponytail over one shoulder. Something about her is cuter this year. New glasses, maybe? Longer hair? All of a sudden, she's kind of working this sexy nerd thing. I'm the omniscient narrator, Simon says. Bronwyn's brows rise above her black frames. There's no such thing in teen movies. Ah, but Bronwyn, Simon winks and chugs his water in one big gulp. There is such a thing in life. He says it like a threat, and I wonder if he's got something on Bronwyn for that stupid app of his. I hate that thing. Almost all my friends have been on it at one point or another, and sometimes it causes real problems. My buddy Lewis and his girlfriend broke up because of something Simon wrote. Though it was a true story about Lewis hooking up with his girlfriend's cousin. But still, that stuff doesn't have to be published. Hallway gossip is bad enough on its own. And if I'm being honest, I'm pretty freaked out at what Simon could write about me if he put his mind to it. Simon holds his cup up, grimacing. This tastes like crap. He drops the cup and I roll my eyes at his attempt at drama. Even when he falls to the floor, I still think he's messing around. But then the wheezing starts. Bronwyn's on her feet first, then kneeling beside him. Simon, she says, shaking his shoulder. Are you okay? What happened? Can you talk? Her voice goes from concerned to panicky, and that's enough to get me moving. But Nate's faster, shoving past me and crouching next to Bronwyn. A pen, he says, his eyes scanning Simon's brick-red face. You have a pen? Simon nods wildly, his hand clawing at his throat. I grab the pen off my desk and try to hand it to Nate, thinking he's about to do an emergency tracheotomy or something. Nate just stares at me like I have two heads. An epinephrine pen, he says, searching Simon's backpack. He's having an allergic reaction. Addie stands up and wraps her arms around her body, not saying a word. Bronwyn turns to me, face flushed. I'm gonna find a teacher and call 911. Stay with him, okay? She grabs her phone out of Mr. Avery's drawer and turns into the hallway. I kneel next to Simon. His eyes are bugging out of his head. His lips are blue, and he's making horrible choking noises. Nate dumps the entire contents of Simon's backpack on the floor and scrabbles through the mess of books, papers, and clothes. Simon, where do you keep it? He asks, tearing open the small front compartment and yanking out two regular pens and a set of keys. Simon's way past talking, though. I put one sweaty palm on his shoulder like that'll do any good. You're okay. You're gonna be okay. We're getting help. I can hear my voice slowing, thickening like molasses. My accent always comes out hard when I'm stressed. I turn to Nate and I ask, sure he's not choking on something? Maybe he needs the Heimlich maneuver, not a freaking medical pen. Nate ignores me, tossing Simon's empty backpack aside. Fuck! He yells, slamming a fist on the floor. Do you keep it on you, Simon? Simon! Simon's eyes roll back in his head as Nate digs around in Simon's pockets, but he doesn't find anything except a wrinkled Kleenex. Sirens blare in the distance as Mr. Avery and two other teachers race in, with Bronwyn trailing behind them on her phone. We can't find his EpiPen, Nate says tersely, gesturing to the pile of Simon's things. Mr. Avery stares at Simon in slack-jawed horror for a second, then turns to me. Cooper, the nurse's office has EpiPens. They should be labeled in plain sight. Hurry! I run into the hallway, hearing footsteps behind me that fade as I quickly reach the back stairwell and yank the door open. I take the stairs three at a time until I'm on the first floor, then weave through a few straggler students until I get to the nurse's office. The door is ajar, but there's nobody there. It's a cramped little space with the exam table up against the windows and a big gray storage cabinet looming to my left. I scan the room, my eyes landing on two wall-mounted white boxes with red block lettering. One reads, Emergency Defibrillator, the other, Emergency Epinephrine. I fumble at the latch on the second one and pull it open. There's nothing inside. I open the other box, which has a plastic device with a picture of a heart. I'm pretty sure that's not it. So I start rummaging through the gray storage cabinet, pulling out boxes of bandages and aspirin. I don't see anything that looks like a pen. Cooper, did you find them? Miss Grayson, one of the teachers who entered the lab with Mr. Avery and Bronwyn, barrels into the room. She's panting hard and clutching her side. I gesture towards the empty wall-mounted box. They should be there, right? But they're not. Check the supply cabinet, Miss Grayson says, ignoring the Band-Aid boxes scattered across the floor that prove I've already tried. Another teacher joins us, and we tear the office apart as the sound of sirens gets closer. When we've opened the last cabinet, Miss Grayson wipes a trickle of sweat from her forehead with the back of her hand. Cooper, let Mr. Avery know we haven't found anything yet. Mr. Kontos and I will keep looking. I get to Mr. Avery's lab the same time the paramedics do. There are three of them in Navy uniforms, two pushing a long white stretcher, one racing ahead to clear the small crowd that's gathered around the door. I wait until they're all inside and slip in behind them. Mr. Avery slumped next to the chalkboard, his yellow dress shirt untucked. We couldn't find the pens, I tell him. He runs a shaking hand through his thin white hair
as one of the paramedics stabs Simon with a syringe and the other two lift him onto the stretcher.
God help that boy,
he whispers. More to himself than to me, I think. Addie's standing off to the side by herself, tears rolling down her cheeks. I cross over to her and put an arm around her shoulders as the paramedics maneuver Simon's stretcher into the hallway. Can you come along? One asks Mr. Avery. He nods and follows, leaving the room empty except for a few shell-shocked teachers and the four of us who started detention with Simon. Barely 15 minutes ago, by my guess. But it feels like hours.
Is he okay now?
Addie asks in a strangled voice. Bronwyn clasps her phone between her palms like she's using it to pray. Nate stands with his hands on his hips, staring at the door as more teachers and students start trickling inside.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say no, Nate says.
That closes the book on another week of First Chapter Fridays. Join us next week for another first chapter, and before we sign off today, a little something extra. If you check out the bio of the podcast, you'll see that there's a link to leave me a voicemail. So if you are really into a great young adult book that you think should be featured here on 1CF, please leave me a voicemail, and maybe you'll end up on a week of 1CF yourself. I'll play your message and then I'll read your recommendation. First chapter only, of course, and no spoilers. But, you know, I really want this to be as much about us. You, the listener, and me, the talent, voiceover, creator, whatever I am. Me, the podcast person. So, I guess all I've got left is have a good weekend. Thank you.